Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, you know, everyone knows that I'm also a New York Mets fan, okay? And one of the longtime New York Mets announcers, after any game that that the Mets would win, after the game, they go to commercial break and he'd say, "And come back for the happy recap." Well, I feel that's the way we should go here. Get ready for the happy recap. Penn State wins a home playoff game, Steve.
Yeah, and look, it was a number of things. It was first home playoff win. I think it was James Franklin's 100th win. It happened on Joe Paterno's birthday, so a lot of things sort of coming together there. In terms of what was accomplished, I think in terms of goals for this year, the important thing is that you won. Not only did you won convincingly. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that. You didn't get any major injuries, at least that I saw, and you were able to get Ethan Grunkenmeyer some snaps. We could talk about that too, but I thought that was really important just to get some game time reps because I could see where the coaching staff just this year, talking about Prabula before he left, just not able to really work him in probably as much as they want, and now they're sort of thrust in this position. So I thought that was actually really important. In terms of the game, in terms of happy recap, I guess I'll play my usual Grinch role here. Happy with the win.
Steve!
Well, on offense, okay, that wasn't a very good start. I mean, let's just be honest. Three and out, Aller looked uncomfortable. I didn't think the offensive line did a lot to make him comfortable back there, at least for the beginning of the game. Not the way you want to start. And I know the weather was a factor, but you're playing at home. He's from Ohio, so I was a little disappointed with how the team, at least offensively, began the game, particularly with how well they looked the prior game at Oregon. In terms of the defense, I mean, it was a very dominant performance. And you would, I think, suspect that or come to expect that just because SMU, I know they're an ACC team. They look very much like a team that was in the AAC not too long ago. I don't think they had much of an answer for Abdul Carter, denied Dennis Sutton coming off the ends there. I'll give credit to Tom Allen because I think one of the things he did was not only try to get pressure, which I think was pretty easy to do, and that didn't really have to blitz anybody, candidly, but take away Jennings' first read, the quarterback from SMU. I think he really didn't have an answer for that. So, the fact that you get two pick sixes, they're down early, I thought that was important. The two, I'd say, plays that really jump out to me in terms of changing game, we always talk about, these handful of plays aside from the two pick sixes. But I think when SMU made the decision early on in the game to go for it, fourth and one, and Jennings threw the ball just behind the tight end. That could have changed sort of the flow of the game. The other thing I would point to is later when Penn State made, we can talk about the decision. I thought it was a terrible decision to go for it on fourth and one on your own 19 there. But that was a chance for SMU to get back in the game, which is why I'm very critical of the decision. And you had that second interception there for Dom DeLuca, his third interception in the game. At that point, to me, it just looked like the game was over. So I understand making the adjustments from the offensive side after that to sort of, hey, let's just run at the clock because we feel we're in a good position. May not want to put necessarily as much on tape for the opponents coming up to scout. So, again, I sort of understand the lack of offensive performance in the second half. But those are sort of the things that jumped out at me. And then I would say from the defensive side, I'd be critical of a few things. The attacking at the secondary level, that left a lot to be desired. We'll talk about this next game coming up with Boise State. They have a good running back. We're going to want to clean that up. I think one of the things that jumped out at me, I mentioned Tony Rojas playing here in the D.C. area. Got to show off some of those running back skills here. I believe he was the All-Met running back player of the year when he was here. That interception return was very impressive. I definitely could tell that guy had a nose for the end zone, knew how to get there. Still would like to see him improve a little bit on the tackling, but I guess overall that's sort of my takeaway.
All right, you hit on a lot of items there, Steve. As usual, I expect that. that's how the show starts. Steve hits on every point, and I'm like checking. Oh, yeah, well, I wanted to talk about that. Well, you get entirely through my agenda. That's all right, Steve.
Well, we should point out there, we don't, people probably figured this out by now, if it wasn't obvious, we don't coordinate. We literally just hit record and go. So I probably frustrate Jim very much with that, but that's sort of the authentic approach we're trying to convey here. So
it's an uncoordinated podcast, is what you're saying, or show. Yes. Entirely. All right. That's legitimate. Unfortunately, it's very true. So I don't care what you went through. I'm going to go through my agenda like you didn't do that. So just go with us. But you hit on a lot of plays that I did want to hit on. First of all, I want to talk about that play, the fourth and one for SMU. Now, I'm the one I like going for it. I do believe in the analytics that talk about teams should probably go for it a lot more often than they actually do. And we'll get to the Penn State fourth down. But with SMU, you're the underdog. You're the big underdog. You're playing at an opposing site. And you've started the game with here's an opportunity. You stop Penn State. You go down, march down the field. You have an opportunity at fourth and one. Maybe a lot of people would have just did the quarterback sneak, try to get that first down and continue from there. But this coach was willing to take the chance. The quarterback rolls out. Steve, he could have walked for the first down very easily. But then you see the tight end wide open. This is a touchdown. He doesn't have to make a great throw. He just has to make a reasonable, mediocre throw. And it's 7-0 SMU. If I'm an SMU fan, I know our tendency here is this, we're doing this from the Penn State perspective. If I'm an SMU fan, I go absolutely crazy about that quarterback on that play.
Yeah, I agree. It was the right call. SMU, you know, like you said, your team coming up there, cold conditions, very much an underdog. I don't fault them for going for it. And as you said, you know, I think that was one of the things that came across in the broadcast, is they were sort of questioning the decision for him to throw the ball. It was there. The guy just made a bad throw. And I actually work with someone who from Dallas who played football at SMU, who was at the game and very much lamenting, you know, had this happened, maybe the game would have been different, but it didn't. And, you know, I think that the call was right. You can question Jennings' desire to throw it as opposed to just sort of take the sure thing. But you talk about, you know, a handful of plays making the difference in the game. And so early on, so crucial. I think that had to be up there at the top.
I really think so. And for the quarterback, I don't want to throw him under the bus, but I will. I thought his interceptions were bad, that particular play. But to your colleague who's from SMU, I think the way this game went, if they had scored that touchdown, probably the score ends up 38-17 instead of 38-10 is my take.
I think so. I mean, I think when I was predicting the game last week, I predicted Penn State by 14. I think if you're SMU, you know, your hope was to try to score early. We already sort of talked about how the Penn State offense, particularly the passing offense, looked out of sync to start the game, and it definitely would have had a different flow to it. I think we also talked about last week the importance of Penn State getting up early, even though it's a defense scoring the points. Regardless, the fact that Penn State was able to get up early put SMU in a position where Jennings has to throw the ball, which wasn't something that SMU wanted, candidly, to find themselves in. I think that was sort of, you know, dictating the direction of the game was really important to Penn State and played a big role here in the outcome. I'd give credit to the defense too. I mean, SMU had a decent running game. You can question who all they played and what that competition was heading in, but you know, the defense did not give up many rushing yards. Again, I don't know how many options the SMU offense really had at that point because they were down so much to really try to run the ball effectively. I also thought the portal may have played a little bit of a factor here too, because I'm sitting there at first, you know, wondering, well, why don't they put the backup in from SMU? You know, this guy's sort of struggling, but then I'm realizing, oh, their backup is entering the portal and transferring out. So that's sort of a no-win position if you're that coach. If you put the backup in and he starts to play well and the guy's leaving, and you've already sort of shattered your confidence of your starting quarterback coming in there next year, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing either. So I think, you know, he may have just concluded, well, I might as well just leave Jennings in here. Just because it's actually worse for me if this other guy comes in and performs well. We're probably not going to win the game. And what's that going to mean for my quarterback and his, I guess, psychology moving forward to next season?
Or, God forbid, even worse, perhaps, than him playing well is the backup coming in and getting hurt. And I'm going to use another baseball analogy here, because probably the closest thing to someone entering the portal but staying with the team is, in baseball, it's possible for a player to be traded literally mid-game. And you will see in a baseball game a player getting pulled mid-game. And the fact is, it's because he's been traded. And really, the last thing you need is an injury. And I think, you know, as a coach of SMU, that could you, especially with the cold weather, you know, Penn State's defense playing so much better, SMU being down the way they were, there is a bit of the risk of an injury also there, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, SMU had a good season this year. That should be taken away from that. It's just, you know, you come up here, you're playing in Beaver Stadium. It was looked on TV like a pretty close to full stadium. It was definitely a good atmosphere. I know there was some concern about that heading into the game. I thought that was a positive. And I think they also said on the broadcast that the next coldest temperature that SMU had played in was 72 degrees. And you saw the pregame, Jennings get off that bus. The guy looked pretty cold. I'll tell you what, when you're down 28-0, it feels even colder. And, you know, I don't think you can underestimate the impact there. And it wasn't just this game. I mean, look, we can talk later about some of the other games, but Tennessee looked awfully cold up there in Columbus when they traveled up as well. So I was really cool to see the home playoff atmosphere. I think there is something to the Southern teams traveling north. But yeah, I mean, from a Penn State fan perspective, I think overall you're happy that you had a win. It's decisive. I think the slow start on the offense is a little concerning, but you know, hey, let's keep dancing.
Well, in this show's tradition, Steve has once more jumped the gun about talking about the weather. We're going to hit that when we come back after this break. With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Steve Pavlik. I am Jim Galante. And once more, Steve, jumping the gun, getting to the cold weather, which we will get to as promised. But during the break, again, Steve jumps the gun. And he wants to talk more about Penn State's decisions on fourth down. And this is related to the cold weather, Steve, being there. Well, first of all, talking about the crowd, yes, there were some concerns. I thought there was a chance you'd walk in and you'd see like empty sections all over the place. That was not the case. They announced an attendance of 106,000. Maybe not quite that, but it was a pretty good attendance. And Steve, it was cold. It was very cold. It wasn't just the temperature. It was the wind also. So walking into the stadium, depending on which direction you go from, it was cold. And speaking of the crowd, they hung in there. They stuck around. I thought 28-0 at halftime, we might see a mass exodus. Steve, we did not.
No, I mean, look, they were hanging around to celebrate, enjoy themselves. At some point, once you're cold, you're cold. You might as well. You might probably paid a lot of money to come up there. You may have driven a long distance. I mean, enjoy it. I mean, we talked about, you know, the beginning of the podcast here, just what a special game this was. First playoff win, Franklin's 100th win, Joe Paterno's birthday. So, you know, if I made it, I would have stuck around myself.
Yeah, kudos to them, and we will get to the rest of the games, but the crowd's enthusiasm at every venue was fantastic. This, Stephen, I know you and I discussed it for the longest time. From the time they announced that they would be having home playoff games, that is what I thought was the greatest thing about this 12-team playoff, home playoff games. I got to say, I think it was a huge success.
I do, too. I mean, you look at some of the venues. I mean, these were some of the iconic places to play in college football. Beaver Stadium, Notre Dame hosting a game, Ohio State in the Horseshoe. I mean, Texas hosting a playoff game. And this should be a reward. Honestly, I wish they were playing the next round of games, even though it wouldn't, I guess, to be Penn State's advantage on campus as well. I really think that really makes the atmosphere much more special and differentiated product from the NFL. Not as much of a fan of these neutral game sites, although I think might actually be to Penn State's advantage in the sense that that offense probably can open up a little bit more under a dome. And that will probably moving forward is something that I think, again, will work to Penn State's benefit. And SMU's quarterback, I mean, how many times, I don't know if you could see there in the game, but on TV, guy kept covering his ears. I mean, he clearly was having issue with the crowd noise. Oh. They made a point, I think, that SMU's stadium is 32,000 people. So you could have three of those stadiums, and you still wouldn't be close to Penn State.
Steve, the moment was too big for the SMU quarterback, and there's, like, no other way to put it. It was between the weather, the noise, yeah. And it's fun to watch, to observe the Penn State crowd. And I'm sure it's like this everywhere else. The crowd, when Penn State's defense is on the field, it gets loud, it gets noisy. But as soon as the quarterback covers his ears, that's just like, it's like begging for punishment. If the quarterback may as well just say, hands to ears, please, please make even more noise. And, you know, the Penn State crowd wants so badly to have an effect on the game. And guess what? They do. And, yeah, that was a huge part of the game, Steve, despite the cold weather. The fans, the crowd was fantastic, I thought.
I do, too. And was glad to see that. Come to expect that. I mean, I think we have the best fans. I'm biased because I guess I'm one of them. But, you know, I'd put our fan base up against anybody's any day.
And it was throughout the playoff games. It was that way. The home field was a great advantage. I do suspect they might expand this to 16 games. I know they say 14 teams. 16 is really, I think, the next logical way to do it. And that would put like 8 games at home, which I think would be fantastic. I mean, we could have had games at, you know, Oregon would have been incredible. Home game, you know, at Georgia would be incredible. And you mentioned about doing it in the second round. Penn State would be at Boise State. Could you imagine the Penn State game on the Smurf turf? That would have been great.
I think so. And I think Penn State fans probably would have traveled well.
Yes, I think so. I think that would be interesting. Now, let's get back to a couple of these decisions. Penn State at least twice went for it on fourth down. Now, the first one, I believe it was like fourth and 10, fourth and long. The alternative was they were in SMU territory. It would have been a long field goal. I'm just telling you, from watching the kickers kicking off, the punters, it must have been like kicking a rock, because it was just, you know, you could watch the game without even like counting, you know, to measure it. You just saw, boy, the ball just is not exploding off their foot. I'm sure that affected the passing game, but in that particular instance, even though it was fourth and long, I thought it was very much the right decision, Steve.
I was okay with that decision. I think that's the right thing. I mean, there was another field goal. Ordinarily, you wouldn't think much about it that he ended up making later on. It wasn't that far away, and you're sort of looking at it like, is this even going to get over the crossbar? And I think, you know, they sort of know ahead of the time. One of the reasons those kickers come out and kick before the start of the game is to get a sense as to, like, okay, what's my range today with the conditions? So I was sort of fine with the first fourth down decision. What I'm not fine with is the second fourth down decision when you have the ball on your own 19. Now, I know it was a botched play in the sense that I think the snap was fumbled, but still, you're up 14-0, okay? Your defense is playing lights out. Their quarterback's rattled. Just think at that point, he'd already thrown two pick sixes, and you want to risk giving them the opportunity to get back in the game? I heard after the game when Franklin was asked, saying, well, I was preaching all week to be aggressive. You know, we don't be tentative. The difference between being reckless and being an aggressive, that's reckless. Okay. He's talking about his players are going to, you know, hold it against him, but they don't think he shares that they're aggressive. If I was a player, why are you being reckless with our season? There was no reason to do that. The downside risk is so much greater than the potential upside there to try to let these guys back in. Now, again, the defense was bailed out. It was another great play by Dom DeLuca. Got a second interception, I believe, right after that, which is probably why we're not going to look back in hindsight and criticize this decision. But that was dumb. Like, you shouldn't do that again. And there's a big difference. Some people are trying to compare it to the decision to do the fake punt in Minnesota. That's apples and oranges, okay? I think we talked before about, yes, that play worked out. And you could say, okay, there's a little in hindsight here. But at that time, the issue was your defense, not your offense. You felt comfortable. Okay, well, if we give it back to Minnesota, we're going to have time to get our offense back on the field and potentially come back. It was the exact opposite on Saturday. You felt good about your defense. You didn't really feel that great about your offense in the first half. So I know what Franklin says. Everybody knows I'm not a Franklin defender, to put it politely. And I definitely don't agree with him here.
Well, I'm usually the counterpoint on this, Steve. I think teams should go for it more often, especially a fourth and very short, as this one was. However, where I agree with you in this instance, it's look at it from the SMU perspective. They weren't able to score. They weren't able to score otherwise. The only way they would score is if you give them a gift. And that was the, as you put it, the risk reward here. The risk was so great. I think that, and now again, and I don't, Franklin didn't mention this, but I think the other part of the equation is like punting. Now, normally you punt, you know, 40, 45 yards, maybe 50. On this day, you weren't going to punt the ball very far. So maybe at that, it was the difference between giving them the ball, the 20, and giving them the ball at midfield. And one might argue, gee, you know, 30 yards is not a great risk. But to me, the only way – there was a momentum factor. And if you give SMU the ball on the 20-yard line and they manage to score, you're 14-0 game that you're dominating all of a sudden becomes a one-score game.
Absolutely. I mean, I think everybody knows where I stand on this. And even if you kick it to the midfield, okay, the odds of SMU getting, what, two or three additional first downs, they have to kick in these elements too for their field goal. The guy ended up missing a kick, I think, early on in the first half too. So if I remember correctly, for SMU. So, I mean, I would have done it. I hope they learned from it. I still think it was a dumb call. But, you know, hey, the outcome was good in the end.
And I think this has been my critique of James Franklin, and I typically support most of the decisions he makes because I think they're analytically based, and I think they are correct. The problem is there is a variable that doesn't go into the analytics, which is what's going on in the game, momentum-wise, or just a feel for the game. I don't think when they do that, I think the math is, okay, it's fourth and less than a yard, our ability to accomplish this on a quarterback sneak. But what they don't calculate in is when the temperature's what it is, all of a sudden the snap becomes a little bit different, a little bit more difficult. you have a team who's on the road dealing with those conditions, and the only way they're going to score is if you help them out, which is what missing on this would do.
Yeah, I agree. The analytics probably tell you the odds of you getting this first down with less than a yard are probably pretty good. But for all those reasons, in addition to Dawkins is a center, right? I think he's like 290 yes. pounds. The nose guard for SMU, I think, is over 350 pounds, okay? So maybe you ought to factor that in too. Again, the upside versus the downside are completely out of whack here. I don't agree with it.
And I think this is a good time to point out, we were talking about the SMU going for it. Now, they were on the plus 25-yard line or so, and they chose not to go with the quarterback sneak. I thought that was a coach who had a real feel for the game. Again, hindsight says they didn't make it, but boy, I thought it was a spectacular call by the SMU coach. I give him a lot of credit for that. That is it for this quarter. I know you want to respond to that comment. I'll let you do that, Steve, when we come back.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday. LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. We are coming off of a playoff win for the Penn State Nittany Lions, actually in a home playoff game. That means right now the Nittany Lions are going to hit the road. So you're going to start making plans for traveling with the team. If you are, you got to check out Collegiate Athletic Travel. They've been doing this for over 50 years. They are the place to go to if you want to follow your Nittany Lions. Go online, check them out at athletictravel.com. They'll be constantly updating with their plans, or you could call them at 814-238-4987. Steve, when we're finishing up quarter number two, we were talking about the two decisions. Penn State on their own 20-yard line, going for it on fourth down, probably not the best decision. And James Franklin pointed out the snap was muffed. But when I was pointing out, though, SMU, yes, it was obviously the smart decision where they were on the field to go for it on fourth and like half a yard. But I thought like the best call of the game was that call where they rolled out the quarterback, where he could have run it for the first down. And he also had an open receiver he could have thrown for a touchdown. Him throwing a bad pass was all that kept that from being a touchdown, and SMU up 7-0.
Yeah, I mean, again, SMU was a team that was 8.5-point underdogs on the road. You have an opportunity here, and you can't be kicking field goals as opposed to going for touchdowns if you want to have a serious chance if you're SMU at winning this game. So I think it was the right thing to do. I think it was the right call because of Jennings and his versatility. Obviously, you know, the play wasn't executed correctly. Jennings threw it behind him, but I don't fault that decision. Franklin was the exact opposite. You're doing this on your own 19. You're favored to win the game. You're up 14-0. You don't let these guys back in. I don't get it. I mean, I really don't.
Well, and I get the trying to be aggressive. I like being aggressive, but if even I'm saying I'm questioning the call, you probably know that should be the case. I'm also the one, Steve, I've been saying all year that I think they've been pulling the reins in on Drew Aller. but he threw a total of just 22 passes in this game. I got to say, though, again, with the weather, I understand it. I know people have talked about this not being his best game. I don't think it was his best game. But, boy, even if you come from Ohio like he does, if you're from Pennsylvania, if you're practicing and all this, I don't care. It's cold. The football feels different. I said it was like kicking a rock. I think it was like throwing a rock also. It was not easy conditions to play in. And I think the fact is you had Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, each one of them averaging 6.4 yards a carry. Compare that with SMU's leading rusher. He averaged 3.4 yards a carry, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, from the offense, I think they wanted to throw the ball a little bit to start the game. They just really didn't execute. And if you're smart, you're going to make adjustments and adapt to the game. And because of these early defensive scores, SMU fell behind. And I think at that point, there was a decision, and this one was the right one, whether it was by Franklin Kotelnicki or some combination, to let's just dial it back. Okay, we're basically up. I think when it was 21-0, it became pretty clear, I think to most, if they're being honest with themselves, even though they traveled up from Dallas, that this game was probably over. So let's just get out of here, going back to that risk-reward calculation. Let's run the ball, keep the clock running, and by minimize our opportunities for risk by throwing the ball and something bad happening. And let's lean on this offensive line, because at the end of the day, while they may not have been doing a great job doing the pass blocking, they did have some success opening holes there for the running game, which, you know, over time is only going to improve because that other team starts to get demoralized. They also get tired just from being out there, from the defensive side. So I think that was the right thing to do. I wouldn't read too much into, Franklin's getting tight now. No, the team was up. You just have to play conservative. It's the right thing to do. You also don't want to show too much on tape as to, what your plans are going to be moving forward against games that are probably going to be closer. Now, it's interesting. I don't want to look ahead too far, but Boise State, I mean, I think Penn State was 8.5 favorite at home against SMU. I believe they're 10.5 favorite on a neutral site against Boise State. And at least SMU was one of the Power Four teams in terms of its roster. I mean, Boise State is a Group of Five team. So you would think the talent advantage would be even more, significant in Penn State's favor this time. I don't know if Boise State's going to have any answer for Carter and Sutton, just the way SMU didn't seem to on defense. And I'd like to think that Penn State's offense should be able to push those guys around a little bit. But we know we have a lot of time to talk about that game coming up.
We will. And just because you brought it up, I think one of the what concerns me about Boise State, and this is Jim stating the obvious, they have a tremendous running back. And I think there's instances in these big games, playoff games, this is when you look for the stars to shine. You know, going into this game against SMU, I said, I kind of like the chances for Penn State against probably anybody when you have players like Abdul Carter, Nick Singleton, Tyler Warren, and yeah, I'll even throw Drew Aller in there because he may not be consistent enough to be, he was going to show up in New York for the Heisman Award. But he's got some next level skill sets to him. And we saw that, the USC game where Penn State was down, multiple scores and the game was put into his hands and he showed, he could handle that. So that's a long winded way of me to say what concerns me about Boise State is not just a good running back, but a great running back. Is this a game where Boise State puts the ball in his hands and says, go carry us, and is he capable of doing it? I'm not saying that's my prediction for the game, but that would be my concern, going out to play Boise State. So I was just a little bit surprised, as you pointed out, again, neutral field. I surmise this means an SMU-Boise State game. On a neutral field, SMU would have been like a solid touchdown favorite.
I would think so. If you look from the talent comparison, just in terms of the guys where they're rated, where they're coming from, I mean, this is a Group of Five team. It's not a Power Four team. SMU is a Power Four team. But SMU also had a lot of transfers into some pretty good programs. It's not like those guys out there were duds. So Penn State should win this next game. I think that's sort of the pressure. Everybody's saying, oh, you know, I've seen some things writing going around that Franklin has the playoff, you know, big game now, you know, off his back. He should have won. We talked about the expectations last week. He's supposed to win this game. I think the expectation that this next game should be even easier for them, provided everybody stays healthy. You're right about, you know, their strength, maybe one of the weaknesses of the defense. I think the front four is pretty good. The linebacking, the tackling at that level sometimes leaves much to be desired. So I'm a little concerned about that. But I hope, my expectation is that Penn State's front four should be able to have that way with that Boise State offensive line. But again, that tackling in the secondary really needs to be cleaned up. I mean, how many games are we in now into the season? We're still talking about it, which is why I have reason for concern. But again, I don't know what Boise State is going to have to deal with Abdul Carter, denied Dennis Sutton off the edge there. The best thing Penn State can do is what happened in the SMU game, is get up early so that Boise State can't rely on that running back. They're going to force them to throw. If they can do that, it's going to be a really long day for Boise out there in the desert.
Yes, yes, I definitely think it can be. And the interesting thing you mentioned with James Franklin, it feels like he's in a no-win situation almost, where he got them a playoff, hey, but it's a 12-team playoff. They lost the two games during the regular season that could be called big games, Ohio State and then Oregon in the conference championship game. Then, you know, a lot of folks are looking at this attractive draw. You get SMU, then Boise State. The problem is you win a playoff game, but it's against SMU at home, a game you're a solid favorite in. So your team boat races them, but it still, you know, the critics are still going to be, he still hasn't won a big game. Well, at least he's at the quarterfinals. We'll see it then. Well, he's a double-digit favorite against Boise State. So he could literally make the Final Four, Steve, and there's some legitimacy to it. It could be stated he's still yet to win a big game.
I think that's probably accurate. I mean, Penn State had the talent advantage against everybody other than Oregon and Ohio State. They lost both those games. They were expected to lose both those games. They're either going to play, assuming they beat Boise State, Georgia, which is probably going to be without their starting quarterback, and Notre Dame, who looks less than impressive on offense. So, you know, I'd be curious what that line's going to be to see who Penn State plays, Georgia or Notre Dame. That Notre Dame-Georgia game actually sort of interests me. That's one of these games I'm curious just to see how it goes. I think, if I recall correctly, is it Notre Dame by 1.5 right now?
I believe it is. I believe it is.
It would surprise me. Just like Ohio State's a 1.5 favorite. Yeah. No, you're the gambling guy. You're the one that usually goes these lines. That's usually
not my fault. You're right. I should know. Oh, Ohio State, yes, is definitely, you know, as you were saying, someone 1.5 favorite and the lower seed. I'm like, boy, that sounds familiar. But it's actually what I have read is Ohio State is the 1.5 favorite over Oregon, which I kind of see it. And we're going to hit on some of these other games when we get into the fourth quarter. But Notre Dame, Georgia. So let me ask you this. You call Notre Dame one-dimensional and Georgia without their quarterback. So Penn State, say, beats Ohio State, plays one of those two teams. Steve, a win over one of those two teams, will you consider it a big win for Franklin or not?
That I will. But okay. I guess right now, I'm reserving judgment. For this season, we don't have one.
I wanted to see where the line was, where you would draw it. But for me to sum this whole thing up with the playoffs, and I know, and we're going to hit it a little bit next segment, the criticism now that's going on because of the way this first round went, the underdogs all got beaten pretty badly, is that there's like a failure by the committee to pick the right teams. But no, these were playoff games played at home venues. I think it was a great success. And as a fan of a team, we get to see more college football, meaningful college football games. That's always going to be a great thing, Steve. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about the rest of the tournament. Stay tuned for that.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve. I'm Jim. And we're starting to have an interesting conversation between segments, Steve. And I said, hold on, let's just do this on the air. You are not James Franklin's biggest fan. We know that. I am a considered pro James Franklin, but I don't think he's perfect. I was not in favor of his decision, the fourth and one from their own 20. There are times when I feel like I'm being fair. And you pointed out, you know, that James Franklin, he's yet to win a big game. And even in this season where they're 12-2, or I'll quote you better, they've beaten the teams they were supposed to. They haven't beaten any team they weren't supposed to. I'm going to like turn that around a little bit. And maybe this is me being glass half full. There are a lot of coaches, especially this season, who would love to be able to say they beat the teams they were supposed to. Ohio State losing to Michigan, Alabama losing to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, Ole Miss, I guess they lost to Kentucky and Florida. And again, Oregon is probably the only other team. And Georgia's losses were good losses. I mean, they lost to good teams and they have some good wins. But the argument that we're now hearing from, you know, Paul Feinbaum and his bunch of minions who are, you know, they won't be happy till all 12 teams in the playoff are from the Southeast Conference. And even at that point, their argument should be they should expand it to 14 because there's two more Southeast Conference teams that should make it. I think labeling Franklin as winning every game he's supposed to, I think in this season especially, that's a great compliment.
It is. I'm not taking anything away from the season. They beat the teams on their roster. But, I mean, doing what you're supposed to do, I don't know, maybe just the way I was raised. Like, I don't know why.
You're supposed to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're just meeting expectations. He'll have an opportunity, hopefully, in the playoff game to get a signature win. He just hasn't delivered on that this season. It's a good season. I'm not taking away from that.
Yeah, you are.
I'm just pointing out the facts. I mean, look, when you're going to be a double-digit favorite to win at Boise State, yeah, okay. Like, people can be disappointed if they don't win, and they would have been disappointed if you didn't beat SMU. Like, that's the right way to think about it. I mean, I guess we can agree to disagree on this point, but one thing I will, to Franklin's credit, the last few years, again, it took 10 years to get to this point, was to not lose the games that you weren't supposed to. Okay. And maybe he's growing as a coach in that regard. I don't know. Maybe this season, having Kotelnicki and Allen, somebody else with some head coaching experience, maybe that sort of rubbing off him, just like the way he had Diaz there too. Maybe he's in these coaching meetings because these guys have some other head coaching experience himself before coming back here as coordinators. I think that's a good thing. And perhaps, you know, that's contributing to this growth here as well. But yeah, I'm not going to consider it a successful season in terms of a signature win if they don't win the semifinal game. If they can get to the semifinals, even if they lose, look, at that point, yeah, you probably did what you were supposed to this year. But as you point out, that's difficult to do for a lot of teams, and I'll give him credit for that. The only thing I would say counter to some of those other examples that you referenced where teams did lose to other teams that they were favored to, is some of those teams also beat teams. They had some big wins themselves, too. So you might have lost a game you weren't supposed to, but you might have made up for it by beating somebody you weren't supposed to as well.
Well, you know, if you're Alabama, you probably have more talent than most everybody. And let's segue this conversation into the bigger picture, the bigger conversation. And as soon as Indiana looked bad against Notre Dame, then you throw in SMU not looking good against Penn State. Oh, my goodness. Alabama would not have gotten, you know, crushed by Penn State. You know what? I'm not so sure. Because this is an Alabama team who knew their playoff life was on the line playing a mediocre Oklahoma team. And refresh my memory. How many touchdowns did they score in that game?
I'm pretty sure it was zero. And I think you're probably being charitable to describe Oklahoma as mediocre. But look, I mean, I think there's something to this weather dynamic. I mean, Tennessee, you know, for all Paul Feinbaum's SEC bias, and yeah, I get it. He's on that network, ESPN, and they have the affiliation with the SEC. So they're constantly just spitting out this propaganda that, you know, the SEC is the greatest conference. Well, Tennessee didn't look very good up in Columbus. And, you know, I'm sure it probably would have been a closer spread had Alabama been coming up to Penn State. But Alabama is an underachieving team this year, as your point, based on the talent, the roster they have. So, you know, hindsight is what it is. And I've heard some criticism, because these games were a blowout, it's necessary. This wasn't good for the 12-team expansion. I don't really agree with that. I think it was exciting. I think sometimes the scores were maybe a little misleading. Look, we talked about how a few more plays sequentially differently for SMU, it would have been a closer game. You can say the same thing about Indiana and Notre Dame. I mean, Indiana goes down. If that guy has that interception the first play, okay, and Indiana scores a touchdown, and as opposed to giving up a 98-yard touchdown run the next play, maybe that's a different game. Okay, I think Cignetti, he was the one having sort of the Franklin disease, getting too tight there with his play calling, not recognizing he had to take some chances there. The rules of the playoff were well established. I think they did as best they could. I get that Feinbaum's always going to have his motivations here, which I obviously disagree with. But I think the other thing too, remember these NFL playoff games, these divisional rounds. I mean, a lot of them are blowouts. Some of these times we just had four teams that were blowouts.
Oh, that's definitely the case, Steve. And I think the Clemson-Texas game was actually a very entertaining game.
Yeah.
And Clemson was on the doorstep, and they got within one score, and that was a great game, a wonderful game to watch, very entertaining. I really enjoyed it, and I think you brought up the point about the home field. Yeah, guess what? Home field is truly a reward here and a big difference. You watch that, and I'm again, you give me so much in an answer, Steve, so much to respond to. But when you brought up Cignetti's coaching, oh my goodness, I thought that was an awful performance by him. That was a terribly called game. But the other part of it, Steve, is I think that's what made me so complimentary of the SMU coach. He didn't come into Happy Valley to try to make the score respectable. He was going for the win. Kudos to him.
I agree. I mean, you're the underdog. Play to win. So I agree with you on that. I also agree. I mean, look, in the regular season, we always talk about what an advantage is play at home and how, you know, it's more difficult to go on the road. That's only amplified during the playoffs. I also think that is what differentiates the college product from the NFL product. It's just the stadium atmospheres, even at this point of the year when the students aren't there. I mean, you saw what it was like for that SMU quarterback and that team to deal with that crowd. I just wish that, I hope if they're going to expand it, that we see more on-campus games. Because, again, these neutral sites, it's just not the same.
I'm with you on that. And I think that even with those folks who were critical about which teams got in and, gee, these games were mismatches, I think the bottom line is still the bottom line, but it's also the fan experience for these home playoff games if anything, I would, and you mentioned it earlier, Steve, why not have that home feel for the second round also? I think it's a tremendous – it's what makes college football college football.
It does, and I've had the good experience of going to some Penn State bowl games. I've been in the Fiesta Bowl, the Rose Bowl. I have gone to some Penn State games on the road, and the atmosphere is much better going to an opposing team's campus, just interacting with the fans, the experience, the atmosphere. I'll take that over a neutral site game anyway. And like I said, I was at the Fiesta Bowl and the Rose Bowl. Those are great experiences. If you get a chance to do it, I'm not taking away from that. I'm just saying the feel, the experience of going to another stadium, to me, that's what it's about. And you know, I think that should be the reward. That should be the incentive. That's what teams should be playing for during the regular season to try to have you know, some incentive here. I think what's going to hurt if we get to this latter round, if Penn State blows out Boise State, and is it Texas that's going to play Arizona State? If Arizona State gets blown out, look, this isn't good for ratings. At the end of the day, this is all about the money. Let's not kid ourselves. And so made some reevaluation here as to what the playoff, you know, size and scope, maybe the locations will be part of this moving forward. But I think you're going to hear more about this if we do have two blowout games here in the next round. And my guess is that's what you would see. It'd be the Texas-Arizona State game. That spread's probably double digits. And obviously the Penn State one is as well.
Well, the thing of it is, and I'm going to do the comparison again to college basketball, is you get the Cinderella teams in there that people in the country will root for them. You know, we want to see James Madison knock off Duke or something to that effect. And you have some of that opportunities, and one of these days that will happen. I think the fix is, you know, those automatic buys have to go away because that creates the awkward seating. But in college basketball too, when you get to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, the Final Four, everybody wants to see the Blue Bloods. Great to see an upset early. So if at the end of this we see some kind of Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas, Penn State, Georgia, Oregon, it's going to be a success, and you know, ratings are going to be crazy good. It's going to be a wonderful experience. I think so far, I know they were blowout games, but I thought this first round was a huge success.
I agree. And you know, we took that before, you know, sometimes you see in basketball, you might be able to have a team that gets hot for a game or two, but usually talent at some point wins out and it sort of gets whittled down here. I think that's even more the case with football just because it's a different game, so many more people, the rosters. So there's a chance for some upsets here in this next round. But I think to your point, by the time we're down to four teams, particularly once we're down to the two, I'd be surprised if, you know, it's not where probably at the end of the beginning of the season we thought more likely we'd end up.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at all with that. All right, Steve, went way too fast. So much to talk about. How about we do it again next week as a preview for the Boise State game?
That sounds great. I'll be in Bedford, Pennsylvania next week, so I'm looking forward to doing it from there again.
Maybe there'll be some Bedfordite people there. He'll look for Steve. All right, that's it for the show. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.